Well, let's start, Brett, with what the farmers, I'm betting, are talking about this week, and that's the long-term weather forecast. The Bureau has put out its long-range forecast for the next 3 months, and it won't be good news, particularly for crop farmers. It shows no sign of decent winter rain on the horizon in southern Australia. They're actually predicting that it will be a drier and warmer than usual winter. So not good news, I guess, for any farmers that rely on rainfall, but particularly grain farmers who some were really struggling anyway and had to plant their crops in pretty dry conditions. Now, the Bureau is also tipping that rainfall will be particularly lower than average in the southeast of Australia and also in the southwest of WA. Meanwhile, the temperatures are predicted to be hotter than usual across the country for the next 3 months. And the Bureau says this is because there's above average sea level pressure in southern Australia. And what that's doing is it's pushing the cold fronts further south, so down towards the South Pole, and it's meaning that on the land we're actually getting quite clear conditions and not much cloud cover, so not much rain. I guess it's good, like, you know, pleasant winter weather conditions, but not if you're...
Makes the commute easier to work.
It does, it does. But not if you're relying on that rain for your livelihood, as many farmers are. And we've talked about just the difficulty, particularly for crop farmers in South Australia, particularly on the Eyre Peninsula, where it's been really dry, and also in Western Australia, it's been really, really dry. But this week we heard that it's not only farmers in those two states who are really struggling. Farmers in much of New South Wales say that they need really significant rain if they're to maintain their crops and pastures after what has already been a dry start to the winter. In that state, the Department of Primary Industries put out a report this week that showed that rainfall in May was less than 60% of normal in many places in the state, and that the situation is now deemed critical for growers. Ian McGowan is with the department, and he says while they're not expecting a full El Nino event to occur, scientists are watching those sea surface temperatures really carefully.
Most of the indications are that temperatures continue to rise, and of course that's going to influence our weather patterns. It is a bit of a concern, I suppose, that the Pacific Ocean goes through decadal phases, and at the moment we're supposed to be, I think, in a cool phase. What might happen if we move into a warm phase?
And a lot of what you're seeing in those parts of the state, people in Western Victoria have been through in recent years. What about at the research level to stop these kind of events?
It's really interesting because scientists are sort of predicting that farmers over going forward in sort of years and decades to come, they'll need to get better and better at adapting to these changing weather patterns, which are predominantly going to be warmer and drier in many parts of the country. Now, there's a bit of a breakthrough this week that could help. Scientists from the Australian National University say that they've made a big discovery that could help them create crops that are actually drought-proof. So this would be massive news. The funny thing is it came as a complete accident. The sort of thing that they were looking into, they were like, oh, that's not what we're expecting, but this could be quite useful. Yeah. So they spent the past decade looking at the effects of drought on plants, and by accident they discovered that some plants have what's like a bit of a self-preservation method that could potentially be life-saving for them if they're not getting enough water. Kai Chan is one of the lead researchers. He's a biologist with ANU. He says the team found that chloroplasts, which are known for capturing the sunlight through photosynthesis to make plant food, they actually found that they do more than just that.
What we've found now is that chloroplasts are much more important than that. They're actually able to actively sense drought stress when drought is happening, and then actually send off small molecules to the rest of the plant that tells these pores on the leaves to close to prevent water from being lost from the leaves and thereby helping the plant to survive drought.
Kath, let's turn away from crops and talk about cattle. Hancock Prospecting, it's making a big venture. It's getting from mining more and more into the cattle industry, and it's confident that it can start sending cattle to China.
Yeah, earlier this year, that company, which is owned by Gina Reinhart, announced that they had plans to send cattle from their northern Australian cattle stations to China. They're now saying that they're confident that they'll have approval to do that from the Chinese government within 6 months. So you might remember they signed an agreement for a joint venture agriculture with a Chinese consortium, and they'd create this sort of paddock to plate supply chain. So they'd take it right from the paddock, you know, and all the processes to get onto the dinner plates in China. Now, the plan is to initially send 150,000 head of cattle to China each year, but build up that up eventually to 300,000. There'd been a bit of sort of how are they going to do this questioning, because those northern stations of theirs are in what's known as sort of risk zones for a disease which is called blue tongue virus that affects cattle. And China has really strict rules in place about taking cattle or any animals that come from these areas because they're worried about that disease risk. But Hancock Group CEO Gary Corti says that they've got an arrangement now where they'll ship the cattle to an island south of Shanghai, and they're hoping that that will avoid those strict mainland biosecurity controls that don't allow the import of cattle from blue tongue risk zones.
Jintang Island is isolated from the mainland, and there's strong support from the Chinese government to develop an export protocol which would allow us to effectively export cattle into Jintang, which is effectively a quarantined area. And we're very confident that that approval will be forthcoming in the next 6 months.
We know what happens when you get locked out of China. It's something the US is going through at the moment, getting access back in with beef. But there's been more news about China and the dairy sector as well come out this week.
Yeah, well, I guess that China showed a lot of promise for Australia's dairy sector, and perhaps we got a little bit too excited about it. Yes. And it didn't quite turn out to have the level of demand that Australian dairy companies had sort of pinged it for having. What we're seeing now around growth in that demand for dairy is that it's likely to remain pretty flat. It will stay within the low single digits with no sign of changing over the next 5 years. Sandy Chen is an analyst with Rabobank, particularly looking at China and dairy issues. He says that should encourage Australian exports to explore new opportunities for growth. So I guess there was that danger that some dairy companies kind of fell into where they were putting all their hope
and all eggs in one basket.
Exactly.
Really.
Yeah. And when China sort of didn't take as much as they thought, it led to a bit of a crisis. So Mr. Chen says, while China will always need dairy imports, there's growth across Southeast Asia, and that should make that region an attractive market for Australian producers.
There is a decent size of population. Per capita milk consumption is even lower than in China, and economic growth has been quite solid. So these are possibly the alternatives market that Australian dairy industry should be looking at, certainly not to ignore.
Now, I know it's not funny, but just the term stowaway pigeon is one that seems mildly funny, but it does have a biosecurity risk.
Yeah, it does at first glance look like it's a pretty interesting story of some unwanted guests arriving in Western Australia this week. But there's a real biosecurity threat posed by these guests. So a couple of animals, biosecurity officials were alerted to the discovery, firstly, of what's called a shrew on board a flight from Bali that arrived in Perth. Do you know what a shrew is?
No, no idea.
It's an animal that's a bit like a mole is probably the best way of describing it. So
that is not what I was expecting you to say.
And significantly, this animal can harbour disease-carrying ticks, and it can also carry the deadly MERS or Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome virus. So could be quite dangerous if it got loose in Australia. But also a racing pigeon from Taiwan was discovered in Port Hedland this week. It had hitched a ride on a cargo vessel. So both of these could have posed big biosecurity threats had they got out in Australia, but they were picked up. And Chief Veterinary Officer Mark Shipp says the pigeon could have wreaked havoc on the chicken industry.
The most serious threat is avian influenza. It would devastate our trade, and also would potentially have a large impact on public health. Both China and Taiwan have reported highly pathogenic avian influenza this year.
Just to keep the theme going on interesting things we don't normally cover, though, Kath, sea urchins and Japan have made news this week.
Yeah, this is interesting. We like in this segment to bring you news of kind of new and emerging farm industries where you could make big money. Well, the latest one is that researchers are looking into whether Australia could actually farm sea urchins. There's a big market for sea urchins in Asia, and it's traditionally been supplied by wild caught sea urchins. But because of a huge amount of overfishing, there's actually depleted stocks of the wild sea urchins, and prices have gone up because of that. And so now they're looking into whether we could actually farm them in Australia. Simon DeWorjon is from the National Marine Science Centre, and he says the market in Japan alone is worth about $200 million, and they'll be sending the first shipment of baby sea urchins to Japan next month.
We'll be exporting juveniles to Japan that they can grow on, but we've also got quite a few companies in Australia that are interested in growing sea urchins here and exporting the live or the processed roe, which is the bit we eat, to Japan.
Now, because drones are never too far from the news, it's not just in the air, though, that they're coming under attack.
Yeah, we've been hearing about drones being attacked by eagles a lot lately because they are becoming so common for farmers to use drones. But it's not just farmers that are using them. Fishermen are also using them. And a Western Australian fisherman had a bit of an interesting incident this week where his drone was actually attacked by a shark after it crashed into the ocean. Ricky Mushmore says that his drone was quickly surrounded by the sharks after it ran out of batteries and pitched into the water when he was pulling up some pots off the Abrolhos Islands north of Perth during the week.
And it's such a nice day that I thought it would be a good opportunity to send the drone up and get a bit of footage of us pulling some good cray pots. But it all went sour when it crashed, and then attempt to recover it, the sharks had a go at it, and that was the end of the drone, but managed to get the camera and footage back, so it wasn't the worst day.
I just like the idea of a killer whale eating a drone and just getting the vision of it being digested.
The footage doesn't go that far, but it is pretty amazing. And you can see it on our website if you head online, abc.net.au/rural. Really amazing footage of the sharks just kind of thrashing around and really playing with this drone, just kind of tossing it around. So well worth a look.
It sends terror through me about sharks. Kath McAloon, thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Now, for more of those stories, you can, of course, head to our website. We'll have a link to them all there. Just head to the RN homepage and you'll find a Country Breakfast under the Programs tab.